Friday postgame show. I'm doing it solo today. This is Dave Kohler. Thanks for tuning in. Remember, the main show crew likes to get out early on a Friday, and that's justifiable. So we kind of fill in Malcolm, Steve, and I and others to give you a Friday postgame show when they won't do it. So anything's better than nothing. And you got to remember that theme, because today it's going to be slightly more than nothing. A couple of inside stories. So every once in a while, Dan Evans helps me out doing the Friday postgame show. He's just been moved to working on the main show now. So as of now, he's no longer going to be available to help me on Thursday recordings of the Friday postgame show. So that kind of sucks. I lose Dan Evans, one less person to work with. I want to give a final update. I got no gifts of at all when I requested tennis or chess accessories or merchandise. Zero. And it's been over a month, 2 months now. So perhaps people like Anna more than they like me, or perhaps her pleas are more sincere and mine are naked calls for just give me stuff just so I can compete with Anna. But all right, I got nothing, and I'm not going to be, you know, now when I go to the post office or the mail room, I'm not expecting anything. It's over. I'm closing the books on that one.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
You got to remember something on the Friday post game. Only 19 people watch and listen to the Friday post game, so your chances are pretty slim on getting what you want.
That might be another factor, sure. Plus, yeah, there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of reasons. I understand. I'm not hurt. But really, how hard is it? You get our address from the website. You go to Amazon. You buy a can of tennis balls. You send it to me. 6230 Wilshire Boulevard. 90048.
Or you can get like tennis rackets or...
No, don't do that. That's too expensive.
Yeah, the shipping are probably like...
And shipping.
And the 19 people that watch and listen to the Friday post game, they're not Rockefellers. They're just fellas like me.
No, they are when it's sincere. And when Anna really loves her woodworking and people get her stuff, it's sincere. All right, so let's move on. A shout out to Malcolm. Just this week, the New York Times ran an article on the disgusting food museum in Sweden. Malcolm was onto that story weeks ago. He broke the news way before the New York Times. So good for Malcolm on that one. Congratulations, Malcolm. And now I'm going to start my little rundown of only four or five stories and comments. I'm going to start with Nebraska. For the fourth year in a row, Nebraska was voted the least desirable place for state in the United States for tourism. And they're trying to figure out what kind of slogans they can come up with to get people to go to Nebraska. And some of the candidates, which I don't have here, are just to admit, yeah, there's not much. This is a place you come to just lay back. But I thought that was amusing, and it makes a lot of sense. The candidates for the least desirable tourist state in the U.S. have to be Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma. If you go further west than that, you have mountains. If you go further east than that, you also have hills and rivers and cities and more population. But so like Iowa's next to Illinois, so there's a lot of people in Illinois. They might travel to Iowa, but Kansas and Nebraska are next to each other and next to Iowa and next to Colorado and Wyoming, the eastern half where very few people live. So who's going to go to Nebraska? So it makes sense that it's the least desirable tourist state in the country. So, and Kansas, I didn't see the list, but Kansas has got to be up there too. When I was a student in University of Colorado for 2 years, on some of my breaks, I said to myself, this is the way I roll. Look, I'm in Colorado. It's one of the most desirable tourist states. I should go to the mountains. But no, I said, when else in my life am I going to get a chance to just drive a couple hours and check out Kansas and Nebraska and the Great Plains of the United States and just see what's there? So on a couple occasions, instead of taking a nice little break going to the mountains, I would drive to Kansas and Nebraska. So I'm one of the few people who does want to do tourism in those places. What drives me there is... I just wanted to know what's there. Everyone says, oh, Kansas, Nebraska's boring, nothing there, but a few million people live there. I wanted to see it. And it's cool to see those old Western towns. They're nearly empty. And this was 30 years ago. They look like ghost towns. They got that classic Western, you know, Main Street and In Kansas, there's a lot to do. Nebraska, there isn't a hell of a lot. I went to like high school track meets and football games and stuff like that, and that was fun. But if you're ever in the neighborhood of Kansas in one summer and you need someplace to go, give them a little boost and go sightseeing there. In Utah, there's a health insurance company that insures a lot of public employees of the state of Utah, and they finally had it with the high drug prices. So this Utah company is now, the insurance company is paying its insured members $500. If they need certain pharmaceuticals that are too expensive, they're paying them $500 plus paying for them to take a flight from Utah to San Diego, cross the border into Tijuana in Mexico and get the drugs there, which will be thousands of dollars less expensive than it would be in the United States. And then I think that's great, and that's all there is to that story. But that's the degree to which conscientious or health insurance companies that are trying to reduce costs have to go to save money and to have their customers pay less for pharmaceuticals. Which is when you're living in Utah, pretty far away from Mexico, to fly them all the way to the border and cross, something's wrong with the system. And just to wrap up, I recommend two articles that I recently read in October issues of The New Yorker. One was an article about a book being written by Kathleen Jameson Hall, who's a well-known political scientist from the University of Pennsylvania. And she did exhaustive research on Russian meddling in the 2016 election and came to the conclusion that it's very likely, or just likely, I suppose, that Russian meddling through social media swung the election toward Trump. That may not be news to any TYT fan or listener, but it was a very compelling case made in that article. And depressing. The Russians did it. They got it. They set out to do this, and they got us Trump. And it was very doable. It was a close election. We all say it all the time. It was just 80,000 votes in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Three big states, 80,000 votes, not that many, with their social media posts and all their manipulation. And it's not the paid posts as much as the organic posts, people sharing fake stories and all that, and fake accounts that would spread stories. They got those 80,000 people to vote for Trump instead of Hillary. And now we see the results. And it was another interesting and somewhat depressing article in a later issue from October in The New Yorker about Sinclair. Sinclair is a company that owns a whole bunch of TV stations, mostly in the Midwest and so-called red states, local TV stations. They get a ton of viewers. They get almost no attention compared to Fox News Channel, but they probably have a comparable amount of viewers, and they're very influential in these Midwestern states that keep voting for the Bushes and Trumps of the world. At first I heard of Sinclair was when Cenk and Ben talked about it over 10 years ago or so, 14 years ago, I suppose, during the Bush-Kerry 2004 election. They did a story about how the Sinclair local stations were forced by the corporate headquarters to carry to deliver these pro-Bush editorials and sometimes present them as news rather than just editorials sent down by corporate headquarters. But Sinclair is a huge and growing right-wing media organization that doesn't get nearly the attention that Fox News gets. I'm sure the TYT audience knows about it, but go to The New Yorker from one of the issues in late October and read this article. It's very interesting. Two more things from that. Sinclair, of course, they manipulate the system that they then rail against. In their early years, they had a lot of their stations, they set them up to be owned by, on paper at least, by minorities. And so they could take advantage of government-offered tax breaks for minority-owned businesses. Sinclair, of course, being a right-wing organization, is dead set against that. But if it's to their advantage, they'll take the tax break, which wasn't even intended for them. And they manipulated the system into doing that. And they're constantly fiddling with the rules and manipulating the ownership so that they can comply with FCC regulations that limit the number of media companies that one owner can have in certain regions. and they are constantly buying more and more TV stations in the same markets in ways that should be outlawed by current regulations, but they're getting around that by cheating, basically. They got so brazen after Trump got elected that even the Trump FCC or the Trump Justice Department had to put a stop to some of Sinclair's unscrupulous business practices as they were trying to take advantage of Ajit Pai and the FCC. So Sinclair is just another one of these depressing and effective cancers on our society's politics. And you should read that article in The New Yorker. So these are two issues from October. Find them online. Good articles to read. My final story here is just going back to Brazil. So that right-wing dictator supporting candidate won the Brazil presidency, Jair Bolsonaro. And he just recently appointed his justice minister. And his justice minister is the federal judge who for the past 10 years or so has been leading and initiating the whole anti-corruption initiative, the car wash, which most observers see as just a way to squash the left because he's disproportionately targeting left-wing politicians as opposed to right-wing politicians and bringing them down with corruption investigations. Most notably, of course, Lula, who is sitting in jail, although he's Brazil's most popular politician and probably would have won the presidency if he had been allowed to run. But the judge who's spearheading that anti-corruption investigation that's been going on for a decade is now the justice minister. So, of course, where he's going to be come January 1st. And what that leads you to think is that it gives more credence to the theory that the whole car wash anti-corruption investigation was a political ploy to get right-wingers into power and get left-wingers out of power. And now he's being rewarded for his decade of hard work. So anyway, the Brazil story has not yet begun. The guy's been elected. He takes office January 1st, and I'm sure we will all be talking about it if he becomes as extreme and anti-democratic as Trump's trying to be. So that's it. That's the last Friday Postgame show before election. Everything could be very different next week. I'm looking forward to my discussion with Malcolm and Steve if they're around next Friday. Enjoy election night with the Young Turks. Make sure you have us on. And there's going to be a lot to talk about, and this could go either way. I think it's going to be exciting. So have a good weekend, last weekend of sanity before next week's craziness. And either alone or with Malcolm and Steve, I'll see you next week. Thank you for being members.